Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Madmans and talk about it.
Yep.
So excited for you all to join us for another wonderful, wonderful episode of the wonderful, prestigious podcast, Mad Yourself a Man. Technically the podcast name is Pod Yourself, but now that we're doing Mad Men, it's Mad Yourself a Man. And we thank you for listening, even though our SEO is impossible. One way you can help.
Just target for yourself. You know, we just keep it keyword dense yourself, and then they'll find it.
100%. If you
think of all the people searching for that,
I imagine most people, they go into a podcast app and they go, I want to listen to a show about Mad Men. What do I do? They type in Mad and Men, which won't help because this is called Mad Yourself a Man, which is not the name of Mad Man. So instead, go to Pod Yourself. Anyways, if you want to help us get seen, 5 stars in a review. Put in those 5 stars. Put in a review. Comment in the individual episodes on Spotify. You can do that now. You can leave comments. Some people leave nice comments. Some people are mad at us. They don't like the way that we talk about the show, and they say things like,
can't you find something else to do besides dining on the drama of other people's lives like a bunch of teenage girls?
To which I say, this is a podcast. What we do is dine on the drama of other people's
yum,
lives.
Yum, 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 yum.
Ooh, yummy. Give me the drama. I'm so hungry. I'm hungry for drum. So yeah, please give us those 5 stars in review and go to patreon.com/Frotcast. You get every episode a week early, plus you get weekly bonus episodes of the Frotcast, where we talk about things other than Mad Men. All right. Today we're going to be talking about from season 2 of Mad Men, episode 9, 6 month leave. And our guest is a wonderful film and TV writer. He wrote the great movie Spaceman that Vince and I talked about on the Frotcast. He also has a great newsletter that you should be subscribed to called Holly Weird. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome Colby Day.
Oh, I see Vince applauding, just so you guys know in the audience.
Vince is
silently applauding.
Yes, he was doing a round of applause like a third grade teacher. One where you applaud. But you also move your hands around.
No, it was shaped in the heart. You just couldn't.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Really nice. It was too nice. I'm really excited to be here, guys. Thank you for having me. It's a treat to get to see you guys try to talk together in unison over Zoom. It's over really fun.
You know, I will say.
The listeners are missing out.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the talking in unison is that, like, it used to be. Like, the technology's gotten better. The delay used to be like a full 2 seconds. And so I'd say, yeah. Mad, you're so, and then he would start way later. And I was like, what are we going to do? And now it's almost like we're in the same room.
It's almost like we're those Australians twins that dress the same.
Wonderful Australian twins. They dress the same and they talk the same, and they both had their mother threatened by a gunman.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the Frogcast, you'll know what we're talking about.
I think people know about that now.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're famous.
I think.
Colby, it is important that we ask you on this podcast about Mad Men. What's your favorite advertisement?
Okay, favorite is tricky.
Okay.
But here's the first advertisement that came into mind when you asked this is there was an ad for, I think, Pepsi, mm-hmm. that was in the pre-roll to the Indiana Jones VHS tape that I watched over and over and over as a child. And it was the Knight Templar with the Holy Grail, but someone had to choose a soda and they choose a Pepsi. And he's like, oh, they chose wisely. And this has been stuck in my head my entire life. We're not even a Pepsi family, but I remember thinking like, oh, Pepsi is the wise Indiana Jones approved choice.
Was this from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade?
Yeah.
Yes, they have to choose which is the Holy Grail in the Last Crusade, and I can't imagine this was an ad that was ever on TV. It was just a weird. They used to have ads before the movies when you got the movie, for the kids out there.
It was so,
and this was one of those.
Yeah. I remember. I think I found it. I could be wrong though. I don't know. This looks like you said at some point someone says they've chosen wisely.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe I don't have it. I want to see. I want to see if I can find it. Indiana Jones. Is it a Diet Coke? No, it's Pepsi. You said, right?
It might be Coke. This is what's interesting. Is what happened in my mind over
let's
the
find
30
out.
Years?
It's a minute 50 seconds.
Holy shit!
Let's see. Let's
this
see
is
what
why
happened
it's in there.
So they're watching it on TV.
While you're up, would you get me a soft drink?
Yes.
Husband asks wife for a soft drink. She goes into the kitchen, turns on the light. Spikes come out of the wall. Why did you? You know, that's a contractor problem. I gotta say, that
yeah,
seems
fire
like
that guy.
You gotta fire that guy. Indiana Jones saves her from the spikes.
Why did it have to be snakes?
And then she. Oh, there's snakes everywhere in the kitchen. There's one hanging over her head. Oh, the spikes are still there. How's she going to get out? This woman is about to die. But she grabs the snake and swings from it. Like
they stole that for the Crystal Skull.
Wait, did they swing on a snake in Crystal Skull?
Yeah, he gets pulled out of quicksand by a snake.
Wow. Okay, so they're still watching it. On,
which is like two of Matt Lieb's fantasies.
What? Which one? Being swinging from a snake?
No, quicksand.
Oh, that's
and
true.
The snake. Yeah.
What if I was eaten by a snake while drowning in quicksand? Those are sexual fantasies. All right, we're gonna keep going. Husband is still just watching TV while wife is almost dying. She picks out a Diet Coke.
Diet Coke.
And then the house is shaking. Husband still doesn't notice. Husband just living his life. Fucking unbelievable. Oh wow, this is a high budget. All right, so they did an earthquake sequence in which the entire earth opens up under the kitchen, not unlike the tram tour at Universal Studios. Everything's exploding. All the dishes fall. This is going to be a nightmare. She jumps over the gap. Oh, she barely misses, but luckily Indiana Jones is there. He picks her up at the same time. He also catches the Diet Coke with his whip. And Indiana Jones, by the way, is definitely not played by Harrison Ford.
How could you say that?
I mean, you can kind of tell. He just threw her. And Diet Coke in center frame.
Have Indiana discover the one-calorie real cola taste worth leaving Pepsi for.
And she...
Wow.
Oh, that is an incredible ad. That's like one of those ads that you see like Peggy pitching on the show, you know?
Wow. It's so much more than I remember, too. As you were pulling it up, they cut a 30-second spot. So maybe I did see it on TV at some point.
Oh, okay.
But wow. Yeah. The most epic advertisement you could ever do.
Truly amazing. And it makes you either want a Diet Coke or to get a divorce from your husband, who seems to not care that you almost died.
They had to pay John Williams $5 million for that ad, and they didn't pay Harrison Ford shit. Yeah. They were like, you know what? We got a guy who looks like you. Fuck off.
You're a dime a dozen, Harrison.
Harrison replaceable. John Williams, iconic score, not so much. Yeah.
Colby, is Mad Men. You've seen the show before?
Yes, I was a madman from 2009 to 2016 or whenever Mad Men ended.
Yeah. Huge mad maniac.
Yeah. I was a madman fanatic. Mm-hmm. I remember finishing the show. We didn't have AMC, so we would watch the show at the bar, which felt appropriate.
Wow.
I was a big, big fan, and have definitely revisited it over the years. And but it's been a long time, so I was stoked to dip a toe back in.
Get back in the world of when men were men.
Exactly. Pre-woke.
Yeah, pre-woke, pre-women.
Well, this episode is actually about the beginning of woke.
I know. This episode starts woke out. You know, it's like everything was fine until fucking Jimmy Barrett had to...
Like, oh, now we got to go to a training that says I can't piss on myself before the big game.
What happened? Everyone pees their pants. It's a rite of passage. Yeah. No,
you got a tattle on him?
Yeah. The woke mind virus started with not allowing your employees to piss themselves. And then it just got worse and worse. And we will get into all of the fun Mad Men shenanigans. But first, we have to play the theme song.
Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chosen madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eyes. Mad man. Mad man. Mad.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else. Once again, we're going to be talking about from season 2 of Mad Men, episode 9, 6 month leave. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
Dawn is still in Betty's bad books, staying at the Roosevelt Hotel while she tries to cope alone at home. Freddie finds himself in the firing line when he faints during a pitch rehearsal. I don't think he fainted, bro.
Where did you? Exactly this is. Happened. This feels like a copy and paste.
It was. Yeah, that was from Wikipedia. I don't know where they got fainting from. He definitely did not faint.
I feel like they got that from the like Comcast episode descriptions where they can't write that he pee-pees in his pants because there's FCC rules or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would assume.
Are you allowed to say someone pee-peed in their pants on television?
You know, I always thought it was in...
You have to use tinkle.
Yeah, I know you can't say piss. That's like one of those words that George Carlin made famous in that bit where he lists things.
Yes, and
it's a very
long list bit.
And you just are like, oh, I can't. He memorized so much. This is
Here he goes.
Here he goes.
He's going off.
He's saying all the words you can't say. No more woke. But yeah, that's kind of what happens in the episode. But more importantly, Vince, what's happening at the time that this episode is set in?
That's right. You know, we can't evaluate a period piece divorced from its period contest. We gotta put some of that context back in, which is something we do with a little segment that we call the News Machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
That's news. We're going all the way back to September 28th, 1962. Hold on, I gotta sign back into this account that I have, verifying that I'm human. Okay.
Two-factor ID.
Yeah, that's a motorcycle. That's not a motorcycle.
turn the turtle around. Get this the right way.
Put the puzzle piece in. Who can do this?
Does the rearview mirror count as a motorcycle? It doesn't seem like the motorcycle. Anyway, September 28th, 1962, big story. LA Times: U.S. fears violence, calls off new effort to enroll Meredith.
Oh shit! They fear violence from Meredith. She's crazy.
She's getting all hysterical. No, in case you thought that this was our first constitutional crisis, no. Back in the day, the federal government was trying to integrate the University of Mississippi, and the governor of Mississippi was like, "Uh-uh."
Was that that was George Wallace, or was he a different governor?
No, it was.
There was a lot of racist governors back then.
Wallace was Alabama.
That's right.
Hold on, I'll get to.
I should have known that. Fucking Forrest Gump.
Of 500 club-carrying state officers forced the federal government to cancel plans to escort Negro James Meredith into the University of Mississippi Thursday night. The Justice Department immediately dispatched several hundred marshals to see that the task is accomplished. The Justice Department called off its latest attempt to have Meredith admitted to the all-white university after Meredith and his escort of 25 marshals got within 30 miles of the campus. A Justice Department statement said the action was taken after it learned that the escorting force, quote, might not be sufficient to accomplish its mission without major violence and bloodshed.
Sources say
700 marshals were on their way to Memphis.
Jesus Christ. Well,
this is a time when you had to believe in the National Guard and think, oh, maybe they're on my side.
I know. Yeah. It's so crazy to think that, like, of the Justice Department as dispensing justice.
The military is there to do something nice for us.
Yeah. The military is going to go in and make everyone woke. Like, this is we've been doing a lot of this joke this
enforced
episode.
Wokeness. This is where it started.
Yeah, but it is crazy now to think about the reaction that this would cause. Now, I think it would be similarly violent if anyone had tried that.
Yeah, now it would just be them trying to take down a statue.
Right, exactly. And you'd still get governors being like, get out of here.
Yeah. We're going to go in a different direction with this next one. We're going to my favorite paper, the Miami Herald. Mm. The framing of this one just seemed off a little bit, which I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Headline, Blonde Survivor Recounts Ordeal.
Starting with blonde, huh?
Okay. Yeah. Descriptive.
Yeah. Well, I don't care about a redhead survivor. They're supposed to die.
Shannon Ireland. Four more survivors from a ditched American airliner, one a cheerful pretty blonde with a spinal fracture, brought ashore by helicopter Thursday.
Unbelievable bearing of the lead with this headline. Is this about a plane crash?
Yeah. The four, together with the bodies of 12 persons who died in the Atlantic disaster 500 miles west of Ireland Sunday, came from the Canadian aircraft carrier Bonaventure. Those brought ashore were Major Carl R. Erlander of Seattle, his honey blonde wife, Lois, Army privates.
This is insane.
Don't worry. One of these survivors was hot, and we are going to tell you about it.
Mrs. Erlander, 31, had a broken arm and dislocated shoulder in addition to her spinal injury.
Luckily, her gams remained unharmed. Ha-cha-cha, ha-cha-cha-cha. Those legs went all the way up.
But she smiled gamely as she told interviewers how she survived the ditching.
But she was game for some questions, if you know what I mean.
And I think you do. I don't know how much further you want me to go with this one. I'm going to switch gears another one that feels oddly framed.
Okay.
Also from the Miami Herald. She admits setting 3 fires, then adds 9 false alarms.
All right.
First line. A dumpy blonde with a long police record admitted setting 3 fires Thursday that injured 5 people, then vainly tried to point out 9 other blazes she said she set that she didn't catch.
Oh, that at least with this I get the descriptor because they're mad at her.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're not leering. They're just upset.
Yeah.
They're just sort of taking pot shots. They're taking, she's taking strays from the newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah. A chubby sow wench. That's like, but she's also blonde. They just need to.
Yeah, dirty blonde. They had to let you know.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Dirty blonde.
Doesn't even use peroxide, that cow.
Yeah. Oh my God. So she's an arsonist.
She's an arsonist. Police tucked her in a cell for the night after taking away all her matches. She set 3 mattresses afire one night last year at the Psychiatric Institute in Jackson.
Wow.
Miss Olson, 38, a wanderer with a record of
Peggy?
More than a dozen arrests, admitted setting fires early Thursday.
Wow.
Yeah.
I kind of think that's, I don't think, I've never met an arsonist, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's like part of me.
That you know of.
Yeah, that's true. There's part of me that goes like, that's crazy to just like, to put one in a psych ward and not get rid of the matches.
Right, yeah.
That yeah, she well, still had them. It seems like a big oversight.
Yeah.
That was one of the amendments back in the day.
Yeah, well, they're like, well, what is she going to do, smoke cigarettes? What's she in for doesn't matter. Probably for like yapping too much at dinner. You know,
they just, she looked pretty dumpy to me.
She looked pretty dumpy to me. I wouldn't
throw
worry
her in
about
the
her.
Fat cell.
Yeah, tuck her in tight. Wow.
This one. So this is all still the build up to the Cuban Missile Crisis. So we got some interesting stories out of Cuba. I went to like the page 34 to get the real interesting stories about Cuba. A headline, conflicts boiling in Cuban sun. A group of Africans went swimming in the beautiful blue waters off of Varadero Beach, Cuba, unhindered by swim trunks.
Okay.
And skinny dipping. Mm-hmm. And strolling along the fine white sands came some young Russians with their girlfriends. Sight of the Africans offended them. This, in turn, offended the Africans. They exchanged insults, then fists. Police broke it up.
What?
It's nice when you can sort of just be like racist in every direction,
right?
In
yeah.
the 60s.
I love that
none of these people are good.
This journalist was like, and I'm a fly on the wall sitting here watching these Africans, these Russians fight.
Yeah.
What race am I, are you asking? You don't have to ask.
It does sort of feel like the setup to a bar joke.
It's
like, oh, you want communism? You want Africans walking around with their huge penises in front of Russian girls?
Yeah, yeah, just swinging them around. And they hate each other, by the way, unlike us who had to call in the National Guard. They're so racist over there in Cuba.
African walked nude in full public view of the little town of Arroyo Arenas, not far from Havana.
To be clear, when they say an African, they are talking about a Cuban. Just to be clear.
I don't think so. I think this might be like an Angolan. I'm not sure, honestly.
Oh, you think? Oh, maybe it's an Angolan. I didn't think about that.
I think so. I don't know. A Cuban miliciano protested. Insulted, the African attacked him. The miliciano shot and killed the African.
Jesus.
Such intriguing tales of conflict between Russians and Africans over nudity, between Russians and Cubans over authority, between Cubans and Cubans over government regulations spill into Miami each day with new refugees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This, see, that I do love that the propaganda of the time is still, it's still kind of the same, which is just like, oh, you know, over there, it's crazy. You know, people, communism is when your dick is out and everyone's killing each other because of the bread lines.
There's Africans and they're walking around naked. Be careful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You don't want that around here, right? So can we nuke Russia? No? Okay. Are you sure? Okay. Okay. Never mind. I was just putting it out there. What if we nuke Russia? That'd be sick.
Yeah.
We don't have to.
I think you're properly contextualized.
I think I am. I think we now know the context of this episode, which is about a completely different news story. Marilyn Monroe has died.
Well, we actually had an episode right after Marilyn Monroe. It was a different episode where we talked about that one. But
yeah. Well, the thing about this is that we set the date of the news machine to the when the episode came out, but 1962.
Some of their episodes are more specific than that, and you know what? That's great for them. But
you know, and
we're not going to change the whole segment.
No, why would we? Even though that probably would make us more contextualized. But we don't need to do that.
We need holistic context about it all.
Exactly. That's how I feel as well. Before we get started on this episode, I did happen to have some extra time this week, so I did make the first verse of this week's Draper D story. It's a, you know, this is an episode about Freddie going pee-pee in his pants. So I changed the lyrics from Save the Last Dance for Me to Freddie fills his last pants with pee. And so here's a little bit of that for everyone to enjoy if you can.
Freddie stands in the trance with the guys, he's red in the eyes, pitching Samsonite. Freddy smiles, drunken smile, he's confused, he's got wet shoes, wants to go night-night. He just forgot that he's not at home, and he has a client meeting. So Freddy fills his last pants with pee.
All right, well, you can listen to the rest of that song at the end of the episode. And but for now, let's start talking about, from season 2, episode 9, 6 month leave. Vince, I'm going to start with you.
Oh.
For a change. Tell me about your thoughts as you were watching this episode. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, aside from the excellent character stuff, I think this episode, it's about how capitalism means that you have to kill Old Yeller sometimes.
Oh, shit.
Old Yeller being Bill Murray's brother in this case. And then, you know, just when you come around to the idea that you have to kill Old Yeller because business, you know, some Eisenhower tries to quit the war because he wants to bang a teenager. It's a ruthless system, but it's also one that's run by children, which is like the sort of the dichotomy of the 60s, in a nutshell.
Is that true about Ike?
Yeah, yeah. He did.
I missed that completely.
He tried to quit the war at one point.
World War II?
Yeah.
Interesting. But that's I didn't know this either.
I didn't know that. That's the war you don't quit. No one,
right?
No one told him that at the time. Luckily, he didn't do that, I think, because he seemed to be a war hero.
Yeah.
Maybe I just don't know
He was his chauffeur. Kay Summersby. Summersby and Eisenhower spent a significant amount of time together during until World War II ended, at which time Eisenhower cut ties and returned to the United States. It is generally agreed that Summersby and Eisenhower became extremely close during the war. Some writers have suggested a sexual relationship between the two. Yeah, he like, I think there was like some letter he wrote about how he was like, he's like, I'm done with this war. I just want to go.
Yeah. I don't care what happens to Europe. I only care.
Can't I just stay in the car with my chauffeur?
Yeah. Can we just drive around a little bit more? I hate being in tanks. I only like being with you. Colby, what did you think of this episode of Mad Men?
I love Freddie Rumson so much. So I was so excited that we were in a Freddie specific story. I got nervous that I was in the Marilyn Manson suicide prevention episode for a second.
Marilyn Manson suicide prevention.
Vibe.
Yeah, that's
interesting
a Sopranos
episode. Yeah, that's more of a Sopranos vibe.
This episode, in fact, doesn't really. It doesn't do much with the Marilyn Monroe stuff.
What it does that's interesting, and I hadn't really thought about I had not put the lens of capitalism and the machinery of war through how I thought about this episode, Vince. But
Vince is very smart.
But Vince is smart.
He's a real smart guy.
Yeah.
You know about history.
I just thought it was fucked up. They tried to fire that guy for pissing.
I thought it was crazy. Was like,
what's the problem here? Oh, it's probably.
But I do think it's very interesting that they, Joan talks with Sterling about someday you'll lose someone you care about. And you can't watch this episode and not think about all these guys in the war, especially Freddy, which was a huge bombshell.
Yes, yes.
And it's so interesting how they just have no patience for like, yeah, someone died, whatever. It's,
right.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
And it's funny that like I feel like if this happened now, Freddy's first move would be like, hey, you know, I killed 10 Nazis and you're going to give me shit about pissing my pants, you little fucking twerp.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah, no, it is interesting that like there is a lens to look at the show as like also a little bit of a meditation on a traumatized generation.
Absolutely.
You know, these like World War II vets, you know, had seen some shit. So they're able to be a little bit more. Like Sterling is just like, why are you crying for Marilyn Monroe? She's a stranger. I hated FDR, but you know, at least I felt like I knew the guy, which I was like, why did you hate? Who did people hate FDR? Who hates FDR?
Oh, yeah, everybody who had money.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Yeah.
I had forgotten that Roger was like a little Nepo baby of advertising. Yeah, yes. And then they bring that up in this episode. I was like, oh, right. Yes. He's the son of the advertising guy.
Right. Yeah. He like inherited the Lucky Strike account that
crazy.
Is essentially keeping him and the whole, the whole advertising agency afloat. Yeah, I thought that this was, you know, if I'm getting more granular with what I liked about it, I loved the way that Don was so defensive about Freddie Rumsen pissing himself because he saw it as a metaphor for him and his wife and forgiveness. And he's just like, you know, sometimes people make mistakes, you know, why do we have to banish them? You know, why make them sleep in a hotel? This is bullshit. I love that. He's like, you know, he stops the junior executives from like dragging Freddie's name through the mud, turning him into a punchline. Cause he knows that like, you know, cause he pictures himself, you know, people talking about him and, you know, oh, he's getting divorced or his wife's mad at him.
Yeah, that idea. I definitely agree about that. But I also think there's an element of, you know, like one of the themes from a few episodes ago where it's like, this is America, become the kind of person who does a job, like figure out what kind of person does the job you want and become that person. Like, like the facade is about being a certain type of person to Don. So I feel like he thinks he is one because he has figured out how to be this type of person. And like this move of firing Freddie is a very like organizational, like it's anti-person. Like it's no, we have to present this kind of appearance, blah, blah, blah. And Don's kind of like, no, but like Freddie's already, he's already the person, like he's already part of the club. So like in firing him, it's sort of it's the same kind of corporate ass covering that is now pretty standard, I would say,
and
like,
right,
like he doesn't like it.
It's he's worried about the idea that this could someday happen to him. You know,
yeah,
he's like I make mistakes, and it's kind of like guys who, you know, earnestly do the anti-woke stuff where they are, you know, we were joking about it earlier, but in a way it like Don does kind of like embody some of that, like that attitude of just like, well, what we're gonna cave to the clients who are just, you know, will want you to be, oh, I'm all nice and I never piss myself. I'm a gentleman. Like, you know, he's mad that there are certain things that are now going to be considered unforgivable when maybe, you know, a year earlier.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, the fine. Whole, I mean, they are talking about gossip because like,
right,
Freddie didn't fuck up an account, like no. No client actually heard about anything that happened, but they're like, they are worried about getting yelled at and worried about like, oh, people are going to talk. And then,
right,
that I feel like that strikes Don as particularly undignified.
Yeah. It was so interesting though, because that is going on for Don and watching how they handle Freddy, I also had the like, oh, this was back when like businesses were run by human beings who like could make a decision about their friend and like be generous and like give him 6 months of pay to go figure his life out.
Yeah.
Instead of today when there's, you know, just like a corporate accounts thing happening somewhere else that decides who gets to stay and not. It was, it was really interesting to see the beginning of, oh wait, we have to be professional a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. And I agree too.
And in this, you know, and professional means like
don't piss your pants.
Like, Well, yeah. I mean, there's that, but there's also like, oh, being a professional means like you don't admit that people make mistakes and you don't. You don't account for any human failings because like this is a system and the system needs. Doesn't need humans. Humans are bad for the system.
Yeah. Right. It is interesting that that upsets Don though, because I do think he also has no tolerance for any failure or imperfection. Like there's an interesting, I hate the thing that I'm doing, even though I like do it all the time, always personally.
I think he also like there was a moment where he's arguing with Roger, you know, about this, like, you know, who are we allowing to judge this piss-soaked man? Pete Campbell, who is a prude and a, you know, fancy boy, and Duck Phillips, who is a teetotaler and kind of a and shitty at his job. You know, someone who he himself had, like, you know, a crisis at his previous agency, and they got him at, like, bargain basement prices. So like he's and Roger is just like, your loyalty is, you know, starting to become a problem. And you could tell there's a little bit of Don that's also like, you know, we're just going to throw someone away, but what about loyalty, you know? What about,
well, also
that?
Not only that, but like, what about, okay, so what are we doing here? We're making a product, right? Like, we're gonna fire a guy who's good at a product, good at making the product, because a guy who sucks at his job doesn't like that, you know, the appearance that he's presenting.
Yeah. I think
a guy who actually ran off one of their bigger clients.
Right. Yeah. I do think that also, like, Don is coming from, like, I think he, it is nice to see in this episode how, they are able to break this news to him, and Freddy kind of acts like a man about it. Like there's a scene in which he just essentially accepts his fate and is like, fuck it, let's go drinking. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to see. It's like that in between moment where it's like, oh, you don't have to like completely turn your back on this guy. You can still go out drinking with him so that he can get up the nerve to tell his wife that he's been fired. Yeah, it's cute. So let's get into the episode bit by bit. Don wakes up in a hotel room that also kind of looks like his bedroom. Couldn't tell. He picks up the newspaper and it says Marilyn Monroe is dead. It says accident or suicide. How about murder?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't she? Isn't there conspiracy theories that Kennedy killed her?
Yes.
Yeah.
What do we think about that?
What I thought about it watching it was like, oh, I'm so jealous to like get the news from the newspaper. Like you just get it once in the beginning of the day.
Yeah.
Instead of like all the time in your pocket.
Dude, that was the best. Like, and it would be one headline and you could go like, oh, well, I'm putting that out of my mind.
Fold it up. Put it away.
That's it. Instead of, you know,
I hit my dog with this later.
It's like, oh, this is sad. Well, time to buy a fish. <You know>. Got to do something with all this paper. Separately, kind of like in parallel to Don waking up scene, you see Betty waking up. And she wakes up also alone. And she's getting up from bed late. Carla, their maid, has taken Sally and Bobby to school. And she's not even combed her hair yet. She's just, you know, these are two separated, you know, married people who are figuring out their life. We see Hollis, the elevator operator.
Yeah, he's quite loquacious today for some reason.
Yeah, so he's like, you know, he's talking to Don and Peggy about Marilyn Monroe, which, you know, makes sense. Everybody's talking about the news of the day, but he is talking a lot. And it's like one of those like scenes where I'm not, yeah, I keep, you know, you're kind of waiting for what the point of the scene is. I still don't fully know. He goes like, you know, oh, I didn't even, you know, they're saying that they didn't know she was sad and, you know, whatever. And he goes, some people just hide in plain sight. And then he goes, I keep thinking about Joe DiMaggio. What's going on here? Is this a cry for help? What is he?
I don't know.
He is asking for help.
Yeah, it's just like some people just hide their sadness in plain sight.
Some people are so sad and just need a friend.
Some people just have these feelings they don't understand, like thinking about Joe DiMaggio all the time. It's like, I'm like, not sure
some
what.
Some people you don't know are suffering, even if they're just standing next to you in an elevator pressing buttons.
Anyways, you guys ever watched baseball and thought, like, why do we marry women? What's the point? No, I just want to watch baseball with my friends.
I like those pants.
I like those. But you know what? I like those, how they get dirty. So they walk in. All the secretaries are crying.
They're sliding in next to each other.
Yeah, sliding into bases. You know, there's something sexual about this game. You ever notice, people? So Don asks Jane if she needs to go home. Don is like, you know, Yeah, Jane is crying. And you know, she's sniffling and stuff, and Don spends the majority of this episode, the scenes between Jane and Don are interesting because we already know, like, Jane is she's there looking for a husband, essentially. And I also think in a way it's like she doesn't mind having an affair, but I do think she's like, I don't care if the dude is married or not, they will get unmarried so that they can be with me. And he spends almost every scene with her just kind of not considering her feelings about anything at all. Like, you know, her advances are subtle. You know,
well, he doesn't like it because he is a seducer. He's a salesman. He wants to go, like, you know, invent the slogan for that dick. And she's like looking at him as an object of pity. Like, she sees him as he feels like the prey in this situation, and he does not like it, I don't think.
Interesting. I didn't think
that. I think there's the threat of her seeing him at all is an immediate turnoff for Don.
I think you might be right about that. I think, like, you know,
well, did you get the clip of what does he say? He says, I don't need any more of your concerned looks.
Yes. When we find out that Jane has accidentally found out that Don and his wife are separated, that Don is living in a hotel, they have this scene together. And this is just another example of, like, she's trying to, you know, she's not like heavy handed, but she's laying it on thick enough for him to understand, like, hey, you need a shoulder to cry on, hubba hubba, wink wink, nudge nudge, I'm right here. And he is not biting. And here's
it that goes without saying that this is personal, and I'd appreciate you keeping it that way.
Of course.
I'd also avoid giving me concerned looks.
Mr. Draper, I hope you've noticed I'm a discreet person.
I don't know you at all, and this is personal, and it's not up for discussion.
God damn. Like, it's essentially, I mean, it's one of those things where I'm not even sure what it's not up for discussion means in this context. Like, what is not, is he answering?
He doesn't want to talk about it. I mean, I get it to some degree, because I have that thing too, where when people are comforting me, I'm like, oh, this is nice. And then they, like, look at me with, like, a kernel of pity, and I'm kind of like, get away from me. Yeah, like, how dare you?
I'm strong.
Yeah. Don't you do that. So I feel like he's just reacting like a child, where he sees her looking at him with pity and he fucking hates it.
Yeah.
I do think Don's superpower is kind of saying things that don't make a ton of sense because they're too simple and straightforward.
Yes.
When he says suicide is disturbing in the scene before that, you're like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no way.
I guess so.
I never thought about suicide. I thought it was just funny. Never thought about suicide as disturbing. Yeah. So, it, you know, in that scene later on, Jane gets Dawn some new shirts because, you know, she's trying to be thoughtful and, you know, thinking about the fact that he's kind of like reusing the same wardrobe over and over. And he I don't know, lightens up a bit, which is perfect because later in the episode, we see that she is soon going to be off the market.
I like how she's clearly making a play for Dawn because she sees an opening. She's like, "Oh, he's
very
separated. This is my opportunity." And then Roger comes along, and she's like, "Yeah, good enough."
Yeah, I was like, "All right, fine." He did just yell at me.
So I have to ask. This is one of those Mad Men things where they kind of do a ton of story just off screen, and then you catch up, right? Like, yes. I'm not missing because I dipped into episode 9.
Right.
That we know what she's been up to with Roger.
No, there was no idea. There was one scene where Joan fires her, and then she like very, you know, pretends to just be sad about it where Roger can see her, but as she knows exactly what she's doing.
She goes with a box of her shit to say goodbye to the boss.
Yes.
And it's so who has been pretty like openly hitting on her, Roger.
Yeah.
And in that scene, Roger gets what he wants, you know, that whole episode. He's just been trying to get her to say where she lives, even though she's like, "You can just check my file." And he's like, "Nah, that's not
that's not fun.
That's not fun.
That's not how a Navy man figures out where someone lives.
Yeah, exactly. We just harass someone into submission. You have no idea. It is a complete twist at the end when you
You replay the previous events in your mind where you're like, there was the box incident and then he found out where she lived. I could see them having had an illicit affair this entire time.
Right. You know, yeah.
Obviously, he knows where she lives. So all he has to do is go stand outside her building creepily.
It's New York. Well, everyone
wind up Victrola or something.
Exactly.
Exactly.
In the 1962. Yeah, just you just put up the Victrola and it's going, "Sawani, how I love you, how I love." Anyways, we find out more about how that's going to happen, but there is a blood drive going on. This is a storyline that doesn't. I don't know. It just exists.
Yeah. Doesn't bother me.
I don't know what it's doing. It's fine.
It adds a little depth to. I don't want to even say depth, but it adds a dimension that's kind of funny of the fact that like Kenny does not understand how to be competitive in Blood Drive because like his job is getting. As many people as they can to donate blood, I assume. Whoever gets the most pints wins. And he's just like, "Well, what do we even win? What's my prize?" And everyone's like, "I think it's just the, you know, helping." And he's like, "Well, I don't know about all that."
I did relate in some way. One of my first like jobs out of college, I can't remember which job this even was, but like one of those like corporate office jobs where you drive out to some office park in the suburbs. And there was like, I think this was around Halloween. Mm-hmm. And so there was like a wing decorating contest. Like whoever's wing was decorated the best would win a prize or something. And everybody was like gathered out in front of the building to find out who won the wing decorating prize. And I was like, "Man, this fucking sucks. I'm definitely do not want to do anything in an office ever."
We're just looking for ways to make it through, you know. Just one little thing to focus on that's not how sad I am to be here.
So don't worry, you'll be less sad if they take a lot of blood. And it's
well, I like the thing where he's like, "Oh, you ever smoke a cigarette after you give blood?"
Yeah, and they're like, "Oh yeah," it's like I nearly fell over, my legs were set, and it was just like, "Yeah, you probably shouldn't have done that."
He's like, "It was awesome."
Yeah, it was awesome. I thought I was gonna die.
Classic Dudes Rock moment.
Yes, 100%.
That's just the adult pass out game.
Yes. Yeah, in the 60s, the pass out game. It was I will say, you know, this is a side note, but like Kenny being the one who's like, "I don't understand this, you know, you don't win a prize," I thought was mildly inconsistent with his character based on, like, if Pete Campbell had said that, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
But I felt like Kenny was always the one who was a little bit more, I mean, he's like a writer, he's a little more artistic. He has that, like, dark...
He's the idiot frat boy with a like the soul of a poet.
Yeah, so I did think it was a little strange that he was the one being like, you know, what's the point of all this? But whatever, I don't care.
I love it as just, this is what The Office has for fantasy football, right?
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do love it as like, what is there to do in the 60s? That's fine.
Yes. And then
it'd be funny if they had fantasy baseball. The one I think about is Joe DiMaggio. DiMaggio, that bum cost me 3 points last week.
So we get, you know, some back and forth where we see these like individual Betty scenes during this episode. One is she is defrosting the ice box. Frosting the ice box? I'm not sure she's doing. She's putting a big thing of boiling water into the ice box. Don't know why. She's doing housework and shit. Mm-hmm. And
my wife saw this and
She's
like, oh, she's living my dream life right now. And I just looked at her. I'm like, what the f-? Because her husband left her. And she's like, no, because she's in the house alone with no job. And she can just like work on little projects and drink wine. And I'm like, all right, I guess I get that.
100%. I was thinking the same thing watching it. I was like, well, when's the last time I just like put on some music and read a book? You know?
Dude, I don't even get to fucking eat a real lunch. I can't remember the last time I had a lunch that wasn't like eating over my laptop or the fucking sink while I worked on 10 different projects.
Yes, she was living the fucking dream. She's just like listening to, you know, the radio is like Marilyn Monroe, super dead still, and she's like, oh, this is sad. And then she immediately
takes a giant chug of wine and stares out the window.
Yeah,
I looked up her book, which is did you guys look this up? Because I didn't look it up to read.
Yeah, what was it?
It's a Pulitzer Prize winning novel from the 1930s that's an exploration of nationalism.
Oh, boy.
So it's like book? Heavy, serious stuff. Ship of Fools.
Ship of Fools. Yeah.
Big time, like, important book. And I think it's very funny, actually, that they gave her, like, I guess I'll read this book.
I
mostly remember that because of the Far Side cartoon.
What is the Far Side cartoon?
I think it's like a ship of fools, and then there's like a van full of fools or something. I don't remember.
Of fools. Yeah, I love Gary Larson's great. Yeah, my friend Max.
It's ship of fools, car of idiots.
Yeah, my friend Max, once he was like describing a Far Side cartoon, it's like, yeah, that's a cartoon where it's like two cavemen are sitting on a hill, and the one says, "I don't know, man." And that's it. That's kind of it.
And they have a line for eyes. That's the best part.
I love that. Oh shit! It's producer Brandt.
Go away.
No, I can't. Oh, excuse me. I gotta stop.
Speaking of car of idiots.
Yeah. How dare you, Brent? Don't ever let him talk to you like that.
That's mean. That's harassment.
I'm gonna submit an official claim to the Frogcast HR.
You got it.
But we should take a break for some ads.
Okay, he's right. You guys, this isn't just a show about guys who make ads. This is also a show that has ads in the middle of it. Sorry, hope it's not for guns. But please, everyone, stick around, listen to these ads, buy them, and we will be right back.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/49ers or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/49ers.
Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. Whether you're installing a patio or adding a new retaining wall, we have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast using our landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape blocks when you shop at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
And we're back. It's Bad Yourself a Man here with screenwriter Colby Day. How you doing, Colby?
I'm doing great. I was pleased to get a Brent pop in. I was pleased to get the ad break.
Didn't
I'm
you
doing
love those
great.
Ads? Those ads
love
are
it.
So good.
I love to buy the things from the ads also, especially.
Yeah, when I listen to an ad and it's like, you know, buy ham, I'm just like, yeah.
Get it in my house.
Get it in my house. I need ham. Freddie. Freddie, we first see him reading a newspaper in his office, and Pete and Peggy and Sal come in, and he immediately starts talking about how he's like making excuses for being drunk, I believe, right? He says, you know, his daughter is 30 and unmarried, essentially. Had a string of bad beaus. And I'm like, oh, he's explaining why he's sloshed.
Oh, I didn't catch that, but that makes sense now that you say it.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, is he trying to make an excuse to pour himself a drink? But I love it.
It could also be that.
Either way, it's very funny to do that at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
I feel like all of the talk kind of faded into the background because the visual of Sal looking at the drink that Freddie's
giant glass.
Him, which is like, you know, probably 8 ounces of neat scotch or something.
The most ridiculous pour anyone has ever seen. And Sal is just looking at it and he's just like, Jesus. He's like, thanks, Freddie. And they're doing a like a dress rehearsal for I think a Samsonite pitch. Mm-hmm. And
again, the pitch just like whooshed over my head at light speed.
Yeah, because you're watching it and it's like, I think Mad Men does a good job of like when it's like they do a really good job of writing blah 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 blah. Yeah. Just wait,
the yada yada themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he famously goes pee pee in his pants, and I have that scene right here.
You know how excited they get, Freddie?
Freddie?
What?
Freddie, do you have another pair of trousers here?
Why? Oh, Jesus. I gotta think.
I really love, I gotta think. I gotta think. How do I dry piss?
He's got his thinking pants on. There was like, we used to talk about like shitty X-Men, and one of the ones my friends came up with was a guy who has like super strength, but only when he's standing in a puddle of his own piss. So I just imagine that's Freddy's, like, his superpower is coming up with the best advertising, but he has to have piss on himself.
He has to be knee deep in his own piss.
I love this scene. Sorry, is there more?
Oh, yeah. Let's play it to the end.
Freddy?
Is he dead?
No, he's not dead. He passed out.
The Hartungs are at reception.
Someone tell Freddy's girl it's canceled. I don't want him wandering in. It's disgusting.
Yeah, that is that's the scene. It's great because Pete is like legitimately disgusted while Sal is laughing his ass off. He's like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. And Peggy is just kind of like embarrassed for him.
Yeah. And I like the way that, I mean, yeah, the reactions are perfect, but I also like the way the actual pants pissing is rendered, because, you know, like I've seen a million of my friends get drunk enough to piss their pants.
Sure,
none of them
sure.
looked quite like this. So it has this thing where it's like, it's not quite believable. Like, I've never seen someone piss their pants quite like that. I've never seen someone pass out quite like that. I've seen something that's like similar enough, but it's like this, but I think because it's a little, it's enough unfamiliar that like I remember this is one of those scenes that, you know, I forget most things about the shows that we watch, but like Freddie Rumsen pissing his pants is one of the moments like of Mad Men that just like stands out in my mind. And I think they created such a memorable image by departing from realism like just enough to where it's like it's a unique situation. It's a situation that you buy into, but is also, you know, it has the scab that you can't stop picking quality to it too.
Sure.
Yeah, it's it, yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, it's something that immediately as soon as it started I was like, oh, this is that episode. Because it is just like seared in my brain.
Yeah.
And the what's so interesting about it is, yeah, it's as it unfolds, I was like, is he having a stroke? Like,
right.
It happens in such a weird way. And I think Mad Men's so good at like doing it in kind of a dreamy, otherworldly way when these sorts of things happen. And you're just with the characters like, what is actually happening here? And the confidence with which Pete says Freddie is fine right afterwards is flabbergasting. It's like,
I mean, and that's so perfectly true to watching someone be really drunk, because it's always riding that line between like, man, this is really funny and should we be concerned?
Yeah, is he dying currently?
Yes,
it's sort
right,
of like
exactly.
What you're tiptoeing around.
There is something like, you know, disturbing.
Should we be drawing on
it?
His face right now, or is this going to put us on Dateline?
Right, yeah. Like, how bad is this? You know, and you know, the interesting thing about Pete's reaction to it, and also just, you know, like throughout, not just in the scene, but throughout the episode, is like, you know what it reminded me of was Donald Trump's reaction to his own alcoholic brother. Like, he has this thing where like he, as soon as he, you know, sees him pissing his pants, it's almost like he has like this recognition of like, oh, I know what this is. This is, you know, a disgusting drunk. Like, he calls them those people multiple times. And it just, it very much reminded me of like the way it was reported that like Donald Trump, you know, when it came to his alcoholic brother who died of alcoholism, like remained kind of like unsympathetic, kind of like, oh, it just means you're weak, you know, it means you're weak and you blame other people for your problems. It was almost like his dad told him this.
I also think yeah for sure, but I like this scene. I like the way Freddie reacts to the whole firing situation, because I don't know, we sort of talk about how like conservatives, they complain about woke, but then they want to do the same like tattletale-y shit and like the same therapy line. Everybody uses the same bullshit like therapy speak. And I feel like if this happened now, like someone like Freddie would immediately like, you know, talk about how ableist it is for people to like, just, you know, something
right,
like that.
Right.
Like he would use it at, like he would
some
couch
of us can't
it.
Help but piss our pants.
Right, exactly.
Yes, he would highlight his own vulnerability as a reason that you can't like shit on him for it.
But yeah, I see
because
what you're saying.
because he's like a person that's born of the generation that went to World War II, like he doesn't have that vocabulary. Like he kind of just has to take it on the chin, even though like he hates what's happening to him. But like if he complains about it in the way that someone now would, like he would not be able to see himself as masculine in the same way.
Yeah, it's true. And you know, there are you know, people getting fired in this show and having freakouts, that does happen. And it's funny comparing
I would be a total bitch if I was Freddie.
100%. 100%. I would be like, here's a list of times that I have seen you way worse than fucking pissing your pants drunk. The Freddy stuff is great throughout the rest of this episode. Before we get to that, let's just finishing off Betty's storyline, because Betty's not doing too much in this episode.
We can tie it in, because as soon as the Freddy thing happens, we smash cut back to Betty, who's like passed out in the middle of her chores, like face down on the couch.
Yes. She is also
in a sunbeam, which has got to be like the most relaxing place to pass.
She's
out.
Having a good day.
She's having you know, or at the very least on paper, a good day. So she is visited by her horse friend, Sarah Beth. They talk about that hot horse boy. And, you know, the conversation seems to be about, you know, the whether or not you can, you know, flirt and not obsess. For her, it's about, like, you know, self-control. Why don't men, you know, practice a little self-control? You know, we can do it. We can turn a switch on and off, you know?
And yeah, I couldn't tell if it was that or if it was like, here's the 10 reasons I am a wasp.
Yeah. I think it's always that. Mm-hmm. But later on, you see Betty at the horse place talking to Hot Horse Boy, and essentially engineers him going out to lunch with Horse Girl. And later they do go out to lunch together, but she doesn't show up. So, you know, Hot Horse Boy was supposed to be like third wheel, you know, in the thing. Instead, it's Sarah Beth and Hot Horse Boy. And she's at home, not answering her phone. You know, she's not going to go. So she's engineered this for one reason or another. We don't really know why. I assume that she wants to live vicariously through, you know, this affair that she's going to make happen. I'm not sure.
I think maybe she sees Sarah Beth as a little more ethnic white, so she can act on some of her urges.
that might be true.
That's 100% what's going on. Yeah. I think it also takes everyone off her plate. It's kind of like a brilliant kid move. Like, it's kid logic, but it's actually like really insane kid logic, where it's like, well, now I don't have to worry about Horse Boy because he's doing his other affair, and I don't have to worry about Sarah Beth whining about her husband and shit because she's gonna be having an affair. I'm clean. Like, it's a great move. I love it.
I think in a way is also this, like, there's this bitter, petty part of her that is wants to ruin a marriage. Like, if I can't be happy, no one can be happy.
Because she's competitive like that.
She is competitive.
I feel like I would like to know her standards for what makes an ethnic white, because it's like some crazy thing where it's like, oh, any place south of Normandy, you know?
Right. Like, yes, exactly. It's that, and it's also like, what's do you know off the top of your head the name of the boat that your people came in on? If you don't know the name of the boat, then no one cares.
I know you guys have been anti horse riding storyline, but Betty and her riding gear.
I know.
I mean,
she's the, like,
unreal.
She's one of the hottest horse girls I've ever seen on television. And I can, you know, sometimes, like, you'll see like dressage or whatever, like in the Olympics or whatever. And there will be, like, you know, people who are like, you know, it's clear, like, it's the horse who has to be pretty, not the person riding it. and then occasionally you'll just be like, damn, what is it about this, like, outfit, this horse riding outfit that is just.
But I think that's why she doesn't like I don't think she loves horses as much as some of the other people.
The dress up.
Yeah. Like, because I don't know. She's a horse girl, but she's like too pretty to be like a real horse. I don't know. I've always described Taylor Swift as like a replacement level horse girl. And I feel like, they have a look, you know
they
what I mean?
Do. Like, no, for sure. Yeah. For sure. So Betty is also, trying to pry open Dawn's desk. Like, she spends the first half of the day doing like normal chores and like reading, you know, drinking some wine, listening to music. And then she's just like, fuck it. And she goes, she's trying to pry it. Carla catches Betty
doing
this. She
goes Hobbit mode. I love it when she goes Hobbit mode.
Yeah, she goes Hobbit mode. And then Carla catches her and tries to like give her some advice. She snaps at Carla, but then immediately apologizes. And, you know, basically, you know, Carla says, you know, have you tried going outside? You know, I think everything is fine if you just, you know, just everything's right where you left it. And that's when she goes, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to ride a horse and then try to ruin a marriage. So Carla, bad move telling Betty to leave the house. Meanwhile, because of the whole thing with Sally calling Jane and being like, when's daddy coming back?
Annoying as Sally.
Yeah, well, I like Sally, but annoying as Jane has
to. No, she's a good character.
You just hate children.
No, you know my feelings on this. It's
they should be replaced with by Andy Serkis in a ball suit. We have
well that
this.
That, but also it's little.
It's only ethical.
It's only ethical. It just really is.
No, it well that's true, but also it's little kids with speech impediments.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not little kids with speech impediments in real life. Like,
of course,
it's natural.
Not.
Like I get it. Like, it, but the thing where
you cast a speech impediment.
Yes, and you find it cuter because they have a speech impediment. There's like it's like a weird. It's like it feels Munchausen's adjacent to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Get me a sick one.
Yeah.
They're more adorable the more sick
this
they
is
are.
The only ethical use of AI is to replace children with artificially intelligent visually generated characters.
The other day my kid was watching some sort of educational thing, some program that was like teaching him to read or something, and they had a little kid with like a really bad and the wabbit went wow wow, and I'm like, okay, no. Like you're casting this in like an educational context. Like, what are we doing here?
Now my
what?
Kid's gonna think it's pronounced wabbit.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah. So because of that whole thing, Don's ruse with the children is kind of up because Jane said, "Oh, he's returning Wednesday or whatever." So he's the one who takes them home, picks them up and takes them home. And they have this scene together, Betty and Don, where, you know, Don is like, okay, do we have a plan here? Like, we need to, like, tell the kids something. And it's clear Betty is like, no, let me just think. I hadn't considered how we're going to make this work beyond being like, oh, he's just gone for a work trip. Don't think about it. Don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think about it. And there's this great scene where like Don essentially comes up with a lie real quick and Betty is mad at him. I have that here.
I didn't want them involved in this.
Obviously that's impossible. We have to tell them something.
Like what?
Okay. How about, I'm working on an account. They're putting me up in Philadelphia, but I'll be home every weekend.
Jesus, did you just think that up?
Or I could just come home.
Just like, Jesus, did you just think that up? And it's like, well, first of all, that wasn't like that, you know, elaborate of a lie. Yeah. What are you doing? But also, it's like, way to, you know, still be mad in that moment is just very funny to me.
It is also what probably half of Don's workday is. It's just sort of like thinking about what could I say?
Yeah.
What could I say I'm doing?
He's doing crisis PR. Like that's kind of his job, you know, like how to spin this in like the least damaging way.
Yes.
I also like the dynamic because like Betty, if you're wondering like what her motivation is here, like I think it's clear that she wants Don to use that guile and seduction skills and his advertising superpower to like try and win her back. And she can sense that he doesn't want to like lower himself to, you know, to like making a big flowery speech about why they should still be married and why she should take him back even more so than what he did. It's like she wants him to, you know, sweat a little bit and tell her the things, and he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, that's true. I think that like she is, you know, in a way, maybe not like consciously, but like hoping that like she's watching him, you know, very easily come up with a super creative like lie that, you know, this is someone who can think, you know, about things. He's artistic as like, mm-hmm. you know, he's creative as Roger said. And he's like, she's like, can you maybe utilize that skill to think of like a nice apology for all of this? And, you know.
Yeah. And he refuses and will not say like, here's what I want. Here's what we should do. Here's what I think. He just like puts it all on. Well, this is your fault, Betty.
you say
what we do now.
And well, he's kind of trapped because he can't quite do the huge gesture,
right,
an apology, because he'd have to admit it because
he hasn't gotten caught, mm-hmm. you know. And so instead it's just like, you
it's
know,
like you're breaking the rules by you're
by
you're
being mad at me before you have proof.
You're not allowed to be mad at me. You can't be mean ever.
It is illegal for you to be mad at me. This would not hold up in a court of law.
This is 1962, Betty.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You do not have the right. And, you know, it's kind of similar to like when Dawn is, you know, gets into a room with Duck and Pete and Roger, and they say, well, we're going to fire Freddy. We have to fire him. And you're like, well, what if he did that in front of, you know, in front of a client? And he's like, but he did it. He didn't. No one knows that he did. Can't without the proof, you can't punish him. It's like it's the same kind of like anger that he has, where he's just like, what are we're punishing people before they get in trouble? That's not fair.
I kind of agree with him on the Freddie Rumpson thing. Like I'm well, taking Freddie sure. Rumpson's side on this, because it's like, yeah, it's that line between okay, is what someone's doing affecting their work performance? And then it's like, no. Oh, but it could send a, like, you're worried about image instead of like thinking about the actual thing that they're doing.
To be fair, though, Freddy is cooked.
He is
toast.
I think, yes.
Hey, but he recruited Peggy, and she was the reason that they kept the account. So in some ways, like, that was him. He did.
Let's get him into management. We should bring him up.
Just have we thought about giving him a raise? But like, I do think there's something similar there, where it's just like, I think, you know, for both of those problems that Dawn is being confronted with, both his like issues with his marriage and with Freddie Rumsen, his whole thing is like, but the without proof of anything that just happened, all we have is like, you know, we have our image intact. So what's the what's the problem? As long as our image is upheld, there is no issue. And that's how he feels about, you know, the same thing with Betty, where it's just like, you don't have any proof. All you have is the word of, you know, some schmuck comedian who has it out for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
I should get credit for being discreet enough not to leave any evidence.
100%. Yeah, I think that's truly what he thinks. And he's and what are we doing, basically outing Freddie Rumsen by doing this? You know, it's interesting. You know, there's I feel like when they wrote this show, they were thinking about stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a layered show. There's always a couple things going on.
I feel like when they wrote this show, they were like, what if we made it good? And that, I feel like that decision.
Yeah, that was their saving grace, right?
Yeah. They were like, what if we made art happen? And they did. Mm-hmm. They certainly did. So we find out that they're going to fire poor Freddie, you know, goes into the office, and well, first we see him leave with a squeaky shoe. That's a lot of fun.
One of the
very funny him splashing out of there.
Yeah. And all the like secretaries are looking at each other, and I can't imagine what they're thinking, because unless you know him, I mean, they might know he's an alcoholic, but who isn't around that office? But you know, if someone was like walking around with a splashy shoe covering their pants, I'd assume you would be like, did he piss himself? But I also, you know, who knows? He comes back in and he like apologizes to Peggy, who Peggy's whole thing is like, oh no, we can just forget that this ever happened. I did that with a baby and everything. You know, it's literally something, you know, Dawn says to her at one point. That, you know, you'll be shocked at how easily you can forget this. And, you know, so she's really not about like snitching on him. But unfortunately they have to fire him, and they have the scene where they, take him out to dinner and they say, Freddie, you know, you crossed a line. And I have that scene right here.
It was a snafu. Isn't the embarrassment enough?
I'm sorry. It was a snafu.
It was a snafu.
who hasn't had a snafu before?
Full salary. You dry out, come back. We'll see where we are.
Monday morning, I'll be good as new. I promise.
There's a line for it. And you wet it.
You see, we're laughing about it. What's the big deal? You remember Bob Peebles? How mean he was? He fired his secretary, and he threw all her things out the window, including her keys.
That was good for morale.
I don't know that story, and it's like, what I love when they pepper in like a little bit of lore from like previous things, where It's like threw away her keys and she's like, "No, everyone loved that. That was fun."
We all hated her. It was good.
Yeah, that was so good.
He's completely in control.
My podiatrist went to Hazleton. Came back a new man with great stories. Only drinks beer now.
It's the best.
Cured.
I guess you get dealt the hand you get dealt, right?
He truly like takes that like a man.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. And in that scene, they also mentioned that, you know, that Freddy killed 15 Germans or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh.
So is the implication that he was like in charge of a Nuremberg kind of situation? Is that what they're saying? Or was shooting guys?
I have to imagine. I'm not sure what they're implying. I mean, you know, through the course of the war, you could have eventually killed 15 people.
Any is possible. Yeah.
It's also possible that he did a mass execution. But just imagining Freddie Rumsen like forcing Germans to dig a ditch and then doing a mass execution, you're like, oh yeah, that's right, these guys are horribly traumatized.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that the show is so good at, is like you can have years with the character and be like, I get this guy. And right. Then Mad Men does this thing where it's like, and there's this other absolutely like unhinged detail about their past that we're right. gonna address suddenly.
Right.
And then the character is never gonna acknowledge that, and it's not gonna change them at all.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, just like, oh, you know, they're essentially the same guy, but they just press it down, you know. It's just but yeah, the scene after that is you know, it's kind of nice because you're watching them still kind of have fun. Meanwhile, you know, like Roger is trying to get Dawn to admit like there's something going on, you know, and Dawn doesn't want to, you know, Dawn doesn't like revealing his personal life. He doesn't like people knowing anything in his life is a failure.
Roger giving him concerned looks.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't like concerned looks. Yeah, they go to a underground casino.
Cool.
And yeah. They all wear those cool hats. You know?
That was the first time the show I was like, this feels like dress up. This doesn't make sense to me.
But I feel like they were doing dress up. Like
No, yeah. I mean, you mean in the show?
The show, yeah. Like I think
it could be.
I think they were semi conscious of like, yeah, we're just a couple of guys out on the town. See,
it could be.
It's interesting.
This section has one of my favorite sort of inscrutable idioms in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about, but Rogers,
when they're saying Dick Dollars, Mike Moneybags until...
No, it's later when Roger says, I'm going to go give a Chinaman a music lesson.
Yes. I do have that. That's at the end of the scene. It is this right here.
I'd like to stay and get all sentimental with you, but got to go and give a Chinaman a music lesson. Want to watch how I do it? Unzipping the fly and everything?
Yeah. Go to hell.
This leads us to our much beloved segment, What?
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 Okay, so...
I'm trying to figure out who the Chinaman in this scenario is. Like, on someone on Reddit says... old saying meaning to take a piss, got that part.
Yep.
China equals porcelain. So, all right, I sort of understand the concept that the PP hitting the ground or the porcelain could be music, but so the Chinaman, so I'm confused partly because
Chinaman is not the preferred nomenclature.
Right.
Asian American.
Just to be clear, we all know.
We all learned that.
We're quoting
Big Lebowski.
There's an old Australianism that calls the hole that you pee out of a Jap's eye.
Jesus.
And so
they even have a racist name for their own penis.
Yes, they do.
Australians are amazing.
So I don't know if I'm conflating the two. Like maybe like the Chinaman, like is the Chinaman, someone's saying that the China is the porcelain. And so in that case, like the bowl would be the
And your Chinaman, penis is a flute.
But yeah, I mean, it sort of makes sense, but it's like four different euphemisms that I'm trying to make work.
It's like I'm gonna play his toilet bowl and with my pee-pee, and that will be musical. And then he will learn something about music from how good I pee into the bowl.
Yeah, and then like, how does he put it in the Coke also?
Yeah, is this have to do with playing joke and playing and doing pee-pee in the Coke? Did we not get an answer from Google? Are we just going to live not knowing what
the one I got was the Reddit one saying that China's porcelain, but then I'm like,
it's leaving a lot of layers to unpack.
Yeah, there's too much there.
British phrase meaning to urinate based on China porcelain and tinkling, the musical sound of, I guess that works.
I guess that makes a musical sound. I suppose so.
The porcelain is China, man.
Because it goes ping, ping, ping. That's what it is.
Matt, our stony silence confirms you're probably right.
Sure. Fuck. I just got it.
Somehow gets more racist when you try to break it down.
I realized that as I was doing it. And I was just like, ugh. But I think that's the answer.
Wow, my heart dropped.
I know. Apologies to anyone who's listening who's just like, guys, drop it. But it's just, you know.
It's hard to parse, I guess.
The point is we're against it, and that shit was racist as hell, and this show does this thing where they introduce us to old-timey racism, and we have to figure out how.
Well, it informs our current present-day racism quite a bit, so we're, archaeologists here. We're trying to uncover.
Exactly. We're trying to uncover, the mysteries of the 60s or something. Mm-hmm. That happens after the scene in which like Freddie is doing great at gambling, whereas like Don and Roger are just kind of, they're glum because they're like, they're watching this old Yeller they just shotgunned to death, like, still twitching. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, at least he's having a good time. It's kind of like all the fun things you do before you put your dog to sleep, actually. Roger's trying to get it out of him. Like, I can tell that you're sleeping in a hotel. Just do a grand gesture. Come on, just do that. And Don is like,
Accidentally convinces him to leave his wife.
Well, no, that happens in a scene after. But first, Jimmy Barrett shows up and Don punches him in the face in front of Floyd Mayweather.
Patterson.
Oh, Floyd Patterson. Okay, that makes way more sense because I was like, damn, how old is the other Floyd Mayweather?
I did the same thing. I had to Google it. I had to figure it out.
Yes. Wait, is that Pretty Boy Floyd?
No, that was a bank robber.
Oh. All right. Well, one of the Floyds. They say goodbye to Freddie. Freddie is like, what am I going to do? without going into this office every day, who am I? And, I feel like that's like one of those moments where you go like, oh, shit, I wish you had asked that earlier, not right when you were about to get in the cab. Bye.
He's like, no, don't do anything existential. It's womanly.
Yeah. Stop thinking about it so hard. Kiss your wife and move on. Side note, when they're picking their nicknames, there's a small moment of anti-Semitism. I don't know if you guys caught it. I caught it. It's very specific. They go, like, what are your names? He goes, Dick Dollars, Mike Moneybags, and Don chooses the name Tilden Katz. Who's Tilden Katz? Tilden Katz is the name of Rachel Menken's now husband.
Oh, shit. I missed that.
Yes. They were introduced a few episodes earlier. Rachel and Don had a little relationship before he accidentally blew it up. And
God damn, let it go. He's like the fuckboy Michael Jordan.
I know. Yeah, exactly. It's your Hall of Fame speech. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I was just like, he was trying to think of what a rich guy's name would be, and he's picked Tilden Katz. I felt like there was something there where he was doing a little anti-Semitism. Finally, Don and Roger are hanging out, and Don says he doesn't feel bad, and they have this conversation that you don't know at the time. They're both talking past each other. Like, Don doesn't know he's accidentally convincing Roger to leave his wife, and it is pretty amazing. I have that moment right here.
I really don't want to discuss it, Roger.
Why, because you feel so bad?
No, I don't feel bad at all. Mostly I'm just relieved. It's your life. You don't know how long it's going to be, but you know it's got a bad ending. You have to move forward.
And move forward. It's your life.
A few moments later.
He's leaving me for a secretary. And you said it was great.
Mona, I didn't say anything.
It's your life. You have to move forward.
Yeesh. You know, I gotta say, how did the conversation go with Mona that she knows to blame him?
Yeah, well, because Dawn said...
Well, I was drinking with Dawn, and Dawn was saying, like, first of all, you suck. Second of all, you know, and I was the whole time I was defending you. I was like, no, she's great, she's great. And then he was like, no, you got to leave your wife. It's your life. It's now or never. Like Frankie said, I did it my way. I don't want to live while I'm alive. Bon Jovi. But yeah, it is pretty rude, I think, to throw Dawn under the bus while you are leaving your wife for a secretary.
Roger quoting his buddy to his wife as he breaks up with her. Yeah.
Best friend Dawn, he said that I gotta move forward with my life.
Well, I just like the fact that Roger's trying to convince him of something, but he's talking to like the world's most persuasive man and accidentally mind fucks. There's that old joke about the like the Chinaman and the Pollock with the fish.
What are we doing?
I'm not going to tell that, but maybe
too late. You've already started with the C word. Can you tell me about the Asian American and the Polish man with a fish, though? How does it go?
I don't remember the exact details, but like the Chinaman. Like,
can you change it? You don't have to do this, Vince.
I'm just doing it in the original context of
don't
the joke.
Don't do it. No, we've all listen. We can't do that anymore. Times have changed. So the Asian American.
The Asian American gets the fish to look like him. And then
this is going to be bad anyways, isn't
it? It's real bad. And then he tries tries to convince the Polish guy to do it, but then the Polish guy comes away and he comes away doing the fish face.
I see.
The Asian American stares at the fish for a while, and then the fish ends up looking like the Asian American.
Oh, I see. It's a squinty eyed.
Yeah,
joke.
Yeah.
And the Polish is stupid.
And the Polish guy tries to do it, but he comes away like doing the fish face. That's basically like the situation that happens. Yeah.
Like that, and I'm glad we. I'm glad we got there.
It's not my joke. I didn't invent the damn joke.
You're a good writer. It's funny.
Yeah, it is really good. It's real. You should submit that in your next Colbert packet. yes, Dawn. That would be really funny to add in a packet. Dawn and Roger in that scene are doing this great thing where you don't notice until, you know, after the fact. Like, if you rewatch a scene, it's great watching Dawn, the most persuasive man in the world, convince Roger to leave his wife and not know it. And it also like answers this question of like, why isn't he using his massive persuasion skills, which Betty notices and says, like, on Betty. Like, Betty says, I thought you could convince anyone of anything. And he's out here going like, I don't want to convince you of anything. You know, you're either going to, you know, come to your senses or you're not going to. And he kind of answers that question. He's like, honestly, I was kind of relieved that she's kicked me out. I don't feel bad because no one can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that I did anything wrong, number one. And number two, I feel like it's nice to be punished a little bit for, you know, what I've definitely have done, and she'll get over it and it'll be fine.
Yeah. Don wants to be punished. He also doesn't want anyone to ever see him. And I think Betty, just like, you're together all the time. She will see him eventually. And so I think the relief is just like, oh, I don't. maybe I don't get caught in at home ever.
Yeah.
But him not wanting to disclose anything to Roger, who has to be his best friend in the world, is fascinating. That Roger's like, I don't know anything about you.
And it leads to a big point of friction in the relationship, which gets explored more as the series goes on. But Don is truly pissed the fuck off that he, that he in some way is involved in Roger making this silly, you know, what he considers a childish decision to run away with his secretary. And we find out that it's Jane. Jane is crying, and and he says, move her off my desk. I don't want to see her anymore. And that is how the episode ends. Do we have a favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something we didn't mention, Vince?
I mean, definitely the pea shoes. The squeaking pea shoes.
Better. Colby, favorite scene, a least favorite scene, something we didn't mention?
I mean, we gotta give it up for Freddy pissing. It's, it's very, very funny. It's very frightening in the moment. Yeah. It's perfect. Good
Freddy,
TV.
Freddy PP number one. I agree. And I think if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, it's the law, I'd give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to get a letter grade?
Solid B+.
Wow, that's surprising. We don't do that every single episode as a bit for years and years and years. Colby, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
I mean, I know you guys give a B+ as a bit, and I think I got to actually think about the episode, and it's been a long time since I've seen Mad Men. And I know that, it has like some of the best episodes of TV. And I don't know. This is a really good one, but I don't know that it's one of the best ones.
Sure.
I'd say maybe it can't be an A, but it's passing. It's a good grade. So, probably above a C.
Okay.
I'd say B+ probably.
Wow. I did not expect it.
Nope.
It's every day is a new surprise on Mad Yourself, a Man, the Pod Yourself podcast about Mad Men. So it is a solid B+ episode of Mad Men and a solid A++ episode of Mad Yourself, a Man. Colby Day, thank you so much for coming on Talking Mad Men with us.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me, guys. Very fun.
Oh, yeah.
I call it Mad Men.
What is the name of the show?
You just called it Talking Mad Men. I was like, hold on a second.
It's an easy name to say. It's easy to look up. Everyone knows what it is.
Everyone knows it. Mad Man Yourself, a pod.
I had a great time.
Where can people find you?
You can find me at my newsletter, which is called Holly Weird. You can just go to ColbyDay.com and find me there. You can find me on all social media. My name's Colby Day. Very easy to find me.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Colby. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, guys. It was.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/broadcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. That's right. You get a shout out. You get a prep school name. And maybe something else, if I think of something. Vince, we have this week two names.
Oh, I love names.
Yes. And one of them is, honestly, it's not the full name. It's one of our repeat customers. And every time I'm like, can't you give us your full fucking name? And every time they say, nothing. So first, it is the person who calls himself Captain Redbeard. Their name, if you look at their email address, is Ben S. So I don't know what their actual name is, but we're going to have to go with Ben S. And try to come up with a prep school name for Ben S.
We're going to call this guy Curly.
Now, why?
Because of the when we look at an S. It's Curly. Plus, that's a good, like, old-timey cowboy name. Oh, look, there's old Curly.
Hey, there's Curly. Is that why they called people Curly? Because they had an S in their name?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. I thought you said I was all right, Spider. that's right. Curly. Hey, don't want to get up early? Call Curly. That's if it was some sort of, like, alarm clock guy. The service guy was on an alarm clock. He's currently doing you. Mm-hmm. He'll wake you up. Okay, and last name is...
I got it. I painted a picture. Really weird picture.
Last name is Jennifer Sigman.
Sigman. We call this girl Freud. Because
I know exactly
Sigmund
why.
Freud, she's got penis envy. You get it.
Yes, that's right. Freud. Don't be annoyed. Call Sigmund Freud. This is, again, another. Jennifer Sigmund Freud and Ben.
I'm just imagining like a psychiatry practice that has the Noid as like an adversary. It's like keeping you from happiness all the time.
Are you annoyed? But yeah, I really love that. And I love their names. And hey, if you yourself want a shout out as good, if not better than that, go to patreon.com/frogcast. Join the $8 tier. $8 tiers or more gets you a shout out. Patreon.com/frogcast. Frogcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
At all.
Freddy stands in the trance with the guys. He's red in the eyes, pitching Samsonite. Freddy smiles, drunken smile. He's confused, he's got wet shoes. Wants to go night-night. He just forgot that he's not at home, and he has a client meeting. So Freddy fills his last pants with pee. Pecan Bowl, a blue-blooded Pecan boy, Bull. Just a Mayflower Pecan goy, Bull. And looks scandalized. He tells Duck, who tells Roger Sterling, who tells Don Freddy needs to be downsized. But Don has been kicked out of his home, and he relates metaphorically with Freddy, who filled his last pan with pee. Freddy, don't you know we love you so, even if you are a drunk? We are sorry, we must let you go. Don sees Jimmy, then he punch. Peggy's mad, finds out Freddy's out. When she gets his accounts, yells at Pete Campbell. He don't care, cause he was a lush, a disgusting drunk, calls him those people. Cause don't forget you're getting his job, you should be more grateful, Peggy. Cause Freddy filled his last pants with pee. Yo, what up, bitch? My name is the Drifters. Flap, 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 flap. I'm a Mr. Man. Sing about Mad Men. See, here's more song. Fine. Freddy forgot that he's not at home, and he has a client meeting. So Freddy filled his last pants with pee. Yeah, Freddy filled his last pants with. Filled his last pants with pee.
Yeah. All right.
Keep it in.
Spring into big savings on all Larson storm doors now at Menards. Larson doors are perfect to enjoy the fresh spring air. Whether you're looking for additional security or a screen door, we have what you need. They come in over 40 styles and 9 colors to choose from. Check out all Larson storm door options in store and find more great deals in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.